everyone, and welcome to Diversify Her Podcast. I'm your host, Raven Hayward, and today I'm here with Dr. Kim Allen. I'm lucky to have met Dr. Allen through my Luther Hodges Scholarship at the Keenan Flagler Business School at Chapel Hill, where she is the Executive Director of the Luther Hodges Program at the Keenan Institute of Private Enterprise and the UNC Keenan Flagler Business School. This program provides a world-class transformative scholarship experience for undergraduate and graduate students of Keenan Flagler Business School. She came to the Institute from UNC's Carolina Center for Public Service. Dr. Allen has more than 20 years of leadership experience in education, community engagement, and nonprofit management in organizations such as UNC Chapel Hill, the NAACP, and the Martin Luther King Jr. History and Public Policy Center, where she served as the executive director. She holds a doctorate in cultural anthropology from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill and a Bachelor of Science in Education and Social Policy from Northwestern University. She's now recently a certified life coach, where she incorporated her life coaching business July 23, which is called Find Your Way Coaching. Thank you so much for being here with me today. How are you doing, Dr. Allen?
I'm doing great, and it's great to be here with you, Raven. I look forward to talking with you.
Yes, I'm honored that I was able to have you come on the show. I know we've been talking about it, so I'm excited now that it's actually happening. So to get us started, I'd first like you to tell us a little bit about yourself and your journey as to how you got to where you are today.
Mm-hmm. So thanks for that question, and I'll try to have the truncated version because I've been here for a long time on the planet, for many, many years. I started it in college, and I had an interesting experience, college experience. We can talk about that a little later if you'd like. But it's where I became an adult, and very quickly became independent with a focus on work as a means to support myself. So work has been a mark of my journey. Much less a career, as work has become a feature of my life. So I've done a lot of different kinds of things, and you mentioned some of them. The Martin Luther King Jr. Public Policy Center, and that work around civil rights advocacy and social justice. I've also been a high school teacher. I have been a social worker. And that was early in my working life. I was a social worker, geriatric social worker. And as you mentioned, a cultural anthropologist. And I decided not to pursue a teaching and research career. Just as I was getting my PhD, I decided I wanted to do something else, that I wanted to focus my efforts in the community and do community activism work. And then most recently, I came back into the university in 2015 with the Carolina Center for Public Service. And I really appreciate the center's emphasis on impact, having the university be in the service of the larger community. And then that led me to the Keenan Institute of Private Enterprise with the business school and the Scholars Program, which it's been my real delight to grow that initiative. And so I think the through thread through it all is work, but work of a particular kind. And I think that work involves work that has impact, and work that I like standing up new things. Creating idea, you have an idea, and then make it happen. Mm-hmm. So that part of work is what I enjoy most.
Mm-hmm. I love how you mentioned impact. I know, at least on my end and with a lot of my peers, I would say with Generation Z, we definitely want to have an impact with what we do. I feel like we don't really want to go through the motions of just doing a 9-to-5 or doing a certain thing just to make money, but we want to know that what we're doing is for the good and that it's having an impact. And you mentioned earlier, and we'll circle back to it right now, that you mm-hmm. felt that your journey started in college. And when you say that you felt your journey started in college, do you think as in career journey or just your life journey? or you figuring out what exactly you wanted to do?
Yeah, I think it's more the life journey. In my time in college, there wasn't, I don't believe, a big emphasis on career development, helping students develop career paths and journeys. College wasn't seen so much as a training ground for a career. And so there was actually little thought given to what kind of work one would do afterwards, or much less preparation for work afterwards. I think that's very different today. Mm-hmm. But my journey starting in college was very much around my life unfolding. So one of the best things that ever happened to me, and at the time I had no clue how impactful it would be, is I had my son. So I was a sophomore in college, and I became pregnant. My son's father and I married. And interestingly enough, it never occurred to me to not stay in college. Like, it didn't occur to me how weird it was. I went to Northwestern University, a PWI, a large PWI, private PWI, in Evanston outside of Chicago. Mm-hmm. Lily White. The physical environment was very much unlike how I grew up in urban Richmond. And it, like I said, it never occurred to me how being a pregnant, a big-bellied black girl in class with all these white people. Mm-hmm. And so I did what I knew to do, which was to go to school. Mm-hmm. That's all I knew to do, was to go to school. And so I kept going to school. And it never occurred to me not to go to school. And so I always said, with my son, he went everywhere with me. He was just in my backpack. for him, being around a college campus was natural and normal. So throughout graduate school, when I returned to graduate school, he was there. He would ride his bike across campus. He knew the professors. The professors knew him. And that was his home. Mm-hmm. The university was his home. So that's why I say my life's journey began in college, because it began with me becoming a mother, me having a child and that responsibility, mm-hmm. me learning how to manage classwork with a job because I still had to work, and being someone's mother and someone's wife. Mm-hmm. That was quite a bit, and I didn't know what I was doing. Or that's what I was doing, even. Mm-hmm. I was just going through. I was just trying to make it through the day.
Yeah. And you mentioned that all that happened when you were a sophomore. So essentially, I'm a sophomore right now. So that's mm-hmm. like me taking on that role of, you know, being a mother and being a wife and then continuing to go to school and now having a job. How are you able to manage all that? And were there ever moments where you didn't know if you would complete school or you mm-hmm. didn't know if you would go on to have the career that you ended up having?
Well, I tell you, Raven, not completing school was not an option. My grandmother helped raise me, and when they all sent me off to college, it was a milestone for the family, because mm-hmm. I was only the second in our entire family. I had one cousin who did graduate from Cornell, but I was the second. And it was not, like I said, it was not an option for me not to. I couldn't go back home. Mm-hmm. I did not. It's not that they would have said, you can't come back. But the shame that I would have felt. Mm. It's not the shame of being pregnant. That's the thing. Mm-hmm. I never felt that. But it was letting them down. Mm-hmm. And so I did spend some time figuring out how I could graduate. Never not that I would not, mm-hmm. but how would I and when would I? And I'm really proud to say that in college we were on the quarter system. And so as opposed to the semester system, and I graduated 2 quarters behind schedule. So I went to summer school, and I loaded up on some classes before the pregnancy, mm-hmm. before leaving school to have my kid. Yeah.
Wow.
So I was only out 1 quarter.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And so while you were out that 1 quarter, did you have an apartment? Did you have a dorm? And he just stayed with you. Well, you got married. So did you get married when you were pregnant with your son?
Yes.
Like, how did that?
Yeah.
I'm just trying to imagine that happening right now.
Yeah.
And it's such a testimony to show, like, you were very determined. You had a plan.
Well, I don't know that I had a plan.
Well, okay. Maybe not had a plan.
I was determined.
You were determined.
I was determined, yes. So, and I've had this conversation with my son, so this is not news to him, that he was, the circumstances under which he was, mm-hmm. he was born and all. So I took some time to have the baby. I went to Richmond, my hometown, because
okay.
I needed to be with family to do this. But it turned out, actually, that I had the baby in Evanston mm-hmm. when I was visiting with my husband.
Oh, wow.
Just before giving the baby, just before. So we were renting a house by that time.
Okay.
A little shab of a shack off campus, and because I wasn't in school, I couldn't take advantage of the benefits of being a student.
Mm-hmm.
And so actually college was a refuge for me and a source of support, so that when I was able to re-enroll, I had some support. So I had student housing. So we stayed in graduate student housing.
Mm-hmm.
And that was for families. And able to get a work-study job on campus. And so actually, just thinking about it now, being in college versus not being in college while being pregnant, mm-hmm. at 20, having a kid at 20, was very helpful. Yeah. Even as it meant having to go to class and all of that, I still love school.
Mm-hmm.
So not having it in my life, that would have been a big missing.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a good thing, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I can't imagine, looking back now, having a kid in any kind of different circumstance. So if I had to decide when I would have a kid,
mm-hmm.
and with whom I would have a kid, I don't know that I would have a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Because thinking about all of what it takes to raise a child, to have a child, the emotional reserves you need, the
mm-hmm.
financial reserves, partnering with somebody to do this, having a sense of shared purpose and being on the same page and aligned, that's a lot
mm-hmm.
going into it to think about. But I was 19, so
yeah.
I had no clue.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't have any of those things in my head about how hard it would be or any of that. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think you mentioning thinking of, you know, all the preparation that it takes to go into starting to build a family, I've sort of known about it my whole life because my mom, my parents in a similar circumstance, they had my brother at 21 and then they had me at 27. So my parents are fairly young to have a graduated college student and then me in my second year in college. And now that I'm at the age of 20, where essentially they were starting to build their family and looking at where I am in life, I'm definitely career-oriented and trying to plan out what I want to do in my future and what exactly my future will look like. And, you know, looking at a lot of the successful, particularly Black women that are in their respective fields, they either didn't have kids, had kids early in their career, or kind of later in their career where they're looking around like 35 plus where they're starting to build down and have their family. So with you having your son at such a young age and then going into your career, did you ever face maybe microaggressions or maybe some similar stories that women that I've had conversations with about just how it is to be a mother going into corporate America or just even in your field where you did social work for a little bit and then you eventually went on and worked in other fields? How was it to be a mother in those fields, and did you ever have any hardships with that?
Mm-hmm. So I married my son's dad, but we were on and off a lot, and we eventually divorced, and so I would actually say that I was a single mother.
Okay.
During most of my son's growing up, and having to juggle life as a single parent is doubly complicated because there's no partner mm-hmm. to pick up to complement what it is that you're doing. So my struggles, and I wouldn't call them struggles, but my challenges were around daycare and having safe, educationally stimulating and affordable daycare mm-hmm. was an issue. Had that not been an issue, it would have all looked different.
Mm-hmm.
But when you don't make a lot of money, and daycare and childcare costs a lot of money, you know, sometimes you cut corners, right? And I had to cut corners. I would have not chosen this babysitter or this daycare center. Mm-hmm. Had I not been in the financial position that I was in, had childcare been affordable,
mm-hmm.
I don't think any parent should have to choose between, you know, good, affordable health care, childcare,
mm-hmm.
Or not for their children. And then, so knowing that my son was in a safe place that was stimulating for him, that he was growing, that he was having fun, and then I could afford, that was an issue. But then also an issue is after school care. So mm-hmm. it's all around child care. So getting from work to the child care center before they closed mm-hmm. or before, you know, you don't want to be the last, your kid to be the last one sitting there every day waiting for his mom to come. That happened way too often. Having to juggle like that, but I wouldn't call those microaggressions,
mm-hmm.
but I think there's things that employers can do, and maybe even the federal government can do, to support families mm-hmm. in providing for more affordable and accessible childcare.
Mm-hmm. Would you say that going through those challenges or experience that you had have sort of influenced the way that you go about your job now, for instance, your position that you hold in the Luther Hodges program? I can just say you're very understanding from what I can already tell in the short amount of time that I've gotten to know you, and you're very big on wanting to truly know us for who we are and just any way that you can help us. Would you say that the experiences that you've had have sort of influenced the way that you're able to be so understanding and just so empathetic with us?
Yes, there's a direct line. There's mm-hmm. a direct through line there. So school, like I said before, school was my refuge growing up. It was a place where I felt seen and acknowledged, and I knew that if I did this math problem or this book report, then I would get rewarded, that the teacher would like me, that I would be seen, because that wasn't the case at home. And so I did well in school. Thank God I did well in school. But what I found when I graduated from high school, which was an amazing thing for me to graduate in the way that I did, believe it or not, I was a beauty queen in high school.
I can believe it. I mean, look at you.
Well, thank you. But I was Miss Huguenot, That's my high school, Huguenot High School. So I was Miss Huguenot, and then we were part of a three high school campus. So Thomas Jefferson Huguenot and George Wythe. So I was first runner up in the complex. Then I was also Miss Mocha, and that was with one of the local fraternal orders. And then I was first runner-up to Miss in the Miss Gold Bowl pageant, which for HBCU fans in Virginia, it's a rival game between Virginia Union University and I think it's Norfolk State, if I'm not mistaken. At any rate, so I did well in these pageants, and my talent was reciting poetry. Mm-hmm. And so I would go to these pageants. I decided what poem I was going to read. I made a costume. It was a Nikki Giovanni poem or a Maya Angelou poem. So I would create these costumes of these women, because mm-hmm. their poetry was often about empowered women. Mm-hmm. And costumes made of sheets, bed sheets. And then I would go on stage and perform these. And my family wasn't in the audience. Mm-hmm. So I think I would get dropped off at the pageants and then picked up. And I also got lots of scholarships. And at those receptions, I would get dropped off and picked up. And so what I came to see later in life was that I didn't have a lot of guidance and support that I could see. I know now that it's the angels who are watching over me. But at the time, there was no one holding my hand or advising me, well, maybe you want to do this, or maybe you want to think about this. Well, what do you want? Mm-hmm. Not what you feel like you have to do or should do, but what's in your heart to do. And not having that kind of presence to reflect back on, to see myself, to objectify myself in a way, had me feeling unsure of what I was doing. Mm-hmm. Was I doing the right thing? Was I doing what I'm supposed to do? And I didn't feel supported in what I was doing. So I felt like I had to do it all by myself. Mm. And I think that's a lot of Black women suffer from, this notion that they have to do it all by themselves. Mm-hmm. And I got it. I got it bad, this notion that I don't need anybody. Mm. And I'm just coming out of all of that. But it stems from growing up, not feeling supported, and my not feeling like I had guidance. And so that's my offering now, knowing how much of a difference it would have made to me. That's what I offer up. Mm-hmm. That's what I would offer up.
Yes, and now you've started your Find Your Way through your life coaching, and you're able to just pour back into others and offer your guidance, and in a way I feel like you've been just my life coach and helping me. Even I remember I talked to you just about the internship opportunities that we have coming up this summer, and just hearing your take on maybe what you would have done, or just your experience in the public sector and how that's just transformed your experience thus far. And I want to know, you mentioned how you're just now coming out of that feeling like you have to do everything on your own. Or I remember you mentioned the strong Black woman kind of facade that we often have to put on. How are you able to come out of that? How were you able to come out and say, I need help? Or where did you know where to start?
Well, Raven, I got so tired. I'm 58, and I've been doing this since I was 19, carrying a heavy load. And it became normal, like that's what you're supposed to do. That's what I saw my mother doing. That's what my grandmother was doing. That's what my aunts were doing. Mm-hmm. That's what all of the adult women, that was my role model. Do, that's the women in the church, always doing.
Mm-hmm.
Not sitting, but doing, all the time doing, doing, doing. And I became such great at doing that I didn't know how to relax.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know what that meant. Part of my growing up is you always have to be doing something. Kids have to always be doing something. Sweep the floor, wash the dishes. There's always something to do around mm-hmm. the house. Grew up with my grandparents, like I said. Always something to do. And so I was a doer. And that went into my work life too, doing. And it got so that I hit a wall. And the doing was always in service to being seen and being acknowledged. And that, I saw there was that's an endless hamster wheel.
Mm-hmm.
I can't do enough
mm-hmm.
in order to get the feeling that I wanted to have, which is to be seen
mm-hmm.
for me and recognized. And so, like I said, I hit a wall. Some serious burnout, and it had me fall to my knees and ask for help. And at the time, the safest person for me to ask for help was my son, my refuge, right? So this person who came into my life at 19, he saved my life. I mean, throughout my life, he's always been there. So he's been a gift from the very beginning, and I have 3 grandchildren, and so he and Sarah have gifted me with that. Those people have unconditional love for me, and so reevaluating my priorities so that it's become not at all about me wanting a job title or a salary or a new Cadillac, because that was in my head for a long time, candy apple red Cadillac. These symbols of success, like mm-hmm. if I had this, then I'd be okay.
Mm.
And I saw what I was doing. I saw how I was chasing these things and how I would get them. I mean, I got a PhD for Pete's sake, and I still wasn't satisfied.
Mm-hmm.
I still wasn't okay. I still didn't feel like I was okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen enough of my friends and colleagues on this hamster wheel of the ones who were professors publishing. You know, it's just endless. It's all endless.
Mm-hmm.
And our commercialized society doesn't help, right? Because you turn on the TV, buy this so that you can feel this way or look this way.
Mm-hmm.
It's just this endless. And so rather than focus outward, turning inward and what's important. And for me, it's become at what I value most is interconnection, right? So much different than this idea of I don't need anybody. I can do it by myself. It's not that I need, but I'm a part of an interconnected
mm-hmm.
web of existence, right? I can't be separated from you because we are part of the same. So in that way, I need,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah, and I think also that it's finding the value in the connections that you're fostering and building those connections, and not only, like you said, interconnected, because I think something valuable that just UNC as a whole, not even the Luther Hodges program, that's given me is understanding how everyone kind of can add to your life, or you can add to theirs, not in a sense of work or school, but just those personal connections and just knowing more about someone. I would have never known that you did beauty pageants growing up unless we were having this conversation. So I think really just taking value and getting to know people in a genuine sense, that's something that I'm definitely grateful for. And with the role that you have with us in Luther Hodges, of course, it's designed for us to do these research projects and, you know, just learn more about the trisector. But what would you say is the key thing that you really want for us to get out of the program?
Yeah. So I've been around higher ed for a while, since 1996. In particular, UNC. Mm-hmm. It's very much home for me. And what I've witnessed over the years is that increasingly students who come to the university, they come with passions that they've been working on all through high school and some in middle school. You know, they have their nonprofits or their businesses or their passion projects and things that they really care about.
Mm-hmm.
And find a sense of self-expression in doing them. And then often what happens in the educational process is that sort of gets tamped down. Mm-hmm. Other things are prioritized. And it happens a lot in business school in particular, because that is a professional school, unlike the College of Arts and Sciences, whose aim is to have you employed.
Right.
At the end of 4 years. And so there's a lot of effort that goes into preparing you for job interviews and having you have certain kinds of experiences, your resume looking a particular kind of way. And it's very easy for students who come in to the business school with these passions for them to sort of get put to the side in the service of getting a high-paying job at the end of college.
Mm-hmm.
So what I want for our scholars is for them to find refuge in the program as a place where they don't have to put that down,
mm-hmm.
where they don't have to put down their passions,
mm-hmm.
and where they can begin to experiment with how to incorporate those passions into their careers. Right, so that it's not separate,
mm-hmm.
but it's part of the same expression of who they are.
Mm. I love that. And thank you so much for all the vulnerability that you've shared with me and just explaining your life journey and how you've gotten to where you are today. I think it's something that's very valuable, and it just shows how strong you are, and more importantly, just how special you are in my sense. Just very inspiring hearing everything, and I'm very faith rooted and oriented, and just seeing how God has blessed you and how you're able to just be a beacon of light to the scholar program and just UNC as a whole, I'm very grateful and thankful that I'm able to now have you a part of my life and along my journey.
Well, and thank you.
And as we come to the end of this podcast episode, I have a signature question that I ask, which is, what's one piece of advice you would give Gen Z listeners to go out and diversify themselves?
Yeah, I found that to be a very interesting question around diversifying yourselves. And what came to mind was a quote by Michelangelo, the creator of David, the Italian Renaissance sculptor.
Mm-hmm.
And when asked how he created this magnificent sculpture, David, he said, I created a vision of David in my mind and simply carved away everything that was not David.
Mm.
I saw the angel in the marble and carved until I set him free.
Wow.
So it's not this idea of adding on, that reveals who we are, but a carving off,
mm-hmm.
to reveal who we are, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we go through all of these socialization experiences and work experiences, and we we're told, well, you should do this and have this certification and do this. And it just piles on.
Right.
But I would say spend time with this person inside and talk with her. If she's 5, if she's 15, but talk to her and listen to her, what's important to her, and act out of that, because that's who you are, you know.
That's beautiful. Thank you so much. I hope you all listen to that and take advice to what Dr. Allen has told us. If anyone would like to reach out to you or get some of your career coaching or life coaching, be sure to check out Find Your Way. I'll be sure to have it linked in the description below. Thank you again so much for coming on the show today, and I'll see you all next time on Diversify Her.